Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Tulips in Tuscany podcast. We're your hosts, Steffi,
Paige,
and Sarah.
And we're on a mission to share your stories and provide some awesome resources for families touring Holland.
We are three moms to some pretty incredible kiddos, and we're excited that you're here to navigate this unexpected journey with us through beautiful Holland.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. We've missed this space and this community so much, and we're so excited to be here, and we're so thankful for you guys who are willing to join us on this new journey as we dive into the world of podcasts.
Before we dive in, here's a quick word from our sponsor.
So I'm sure everyone is dying to know, how did you come up with the name Tulips in Tuscany?
Yeah, that's a good question. So it's kind of a very unique name. Originally, our team consisted of myself, Taylor, Mercedes, and Julie, which if you've been following our page for a while, you know. And just due to a lot of different life changes and things going on, our team has kind of shifted over time. But we had all really wanted to come up with something unique. And so we loved the poem, Welcome to Holland by Emily Kingsley. And we just felt like it was a great play on words. And we loved the idea behind touring Holland. So we kind of came up with Tulips in Tuscany. Okay, so I'm going to read Welcome to Holland for you guys, because I feel like if you have a child who's differently abled or a loved one who's differently abled, this poem is just really beautifully written. So it says, I'm often asked to describe the experience of raising a child with a disability, to try to help people who have not shared that unique experience to understand it, to imagine how it would feel. It's like this. When you're going to have a baby, it's like planning a fabulous vacation trip to Italy. You buy a bunch of guidebooks and make your wonderful plans, the Colosseum, the Michelangelo David, the gondolas in Venice. You may learn some handy phrases in Italian. It's all very exciting. After months of eager anticipation, the day finally arrives. You pack your bags and off you go. Several hours later, the plane lands. The stewardess comes in and says, "Welcome to Holland." Holland, you say, what do you mean Holland? I signed up for Italy. I'm supposed to be in Italy. All my life, I've dreamed of going to Italy. But there's been a change in the flight plan. They've landed in Holland, and there you must stay. The important thing is that they haven't taken you to horrible, disgusting, filthy place full of pestilence, famine, and disease. It's just a different place. So you must go out and buy new guidebooks, and you must learn a whole new language, and you'll meet a whole new group of people you would never have met. It's just a different place. It's slower paced than Italy, less flashy than Italy. But after you've been there for a while and you catch your breath, you look around and you begin to notice that Holland has windmills and Holland has tulips. Holland even has Rembrandts. But everyone you know is busy coming and going from Italy, and they're all bragging about what a wonderful time they had there. And for the rest of your life, you will say, yes, that's where I was supposed to go. That's what I had planned. And the pain of that will never, ever, ever, ever go away. Because the loss of that dream is very, very significant loss. But if you spend your life mourning the fact that you didn't get to go to Italy, you may never be free to enjoy the very special, the very lovely things about Holland. I think when we were coming up with Tulips in Tuscany, the name, we kind of took that poem, but we also talked about kind of our own feelings and our perspective of it. So we kind of said that we don't necessarily feel like we're stuck in slower Holland, which was kind of some of the wording. Often we feel like life is moving so quickly around us and like we are still in fast-paced Italy, but rather we have our own tulip from Holland that's with us, who's reminding us to slow down, to celebrate the victories, to stop and smell the tulips. So we came up with Tulips in Tuscany. So it's like our own tulip, but we are in Italy, Tuscany, but we just, our lifestyle is just a little different, I guess.
I think that's
so true. Yeah, I love that poem. I love that you shared it.
Yeah, life can be plenty colorful with special needs. I think we have some really incredible experiences that parents of typical children don't always get to have. And I have one of each, so I can definitely attest to both being beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm curious now that I have a little 3-month-old to see, already seeing some of the milestones that he's hitting, and he's only 3 months and it's like blowing my mind. But just totally different, you know, different walk of life, and that's okay.
So for those of you who haven't been following along on Steffi's journey, tell us, Steffi, the inspiration behind Tulips.
Yeah, I think it mostly just came of a place from like desperately wanting to build community. I feel like I've seen the Down syndrome community. So Joshua, my little guy, has Down syndrome. I feel like the Down syndrome community is so tightly knit. We're all really close. I feel like it's kind of a small world. Like everyone knows everyone in some way, or we all have some sort of connection to somebody within the community. And that's one of the things I always tell new moms is like the Down syndrome community is so amazing. You're going to jump right in and like feel really connected. And the more I was talking to moms outside of the Down syndrome community, but who did have a child with a diagnosis, they felt really lost. And they didn't necessarily have that same kind of community. And Sarah, I know you being a mom who has a child with Fragile X, I don't know what, you know, like the autism community feels like, or if you feel like you have this tight-knit group. I guess it probably really depends on the diagnosis, but I really wanted to create this space where it was for everyone. Like everyone could sit at the table, whatever the diagnosis was, that we could all raise awareness about these different diagnoses, but it not just necessarily be like specific to Down syndrome or specific to autism or whatever that is, and raising awareness for it.
So great.
And I loved the idea that it was social media driven, because I feel like anybody, like in most any country really, has access to that.
Oh, absolutely.
So that people can connect and hop on and build community in some way. And social media is just like such a cool way to do that.
I know. Yeah, I feel like some of my other Fragile X moms that I talk to, like I just consider them friends. And I mean, I've never met them, you know?
Yeah. Isn't that weird? Like I have a group of friends on here that we met. Hey, we're actually all in the group. That's how we met. This like social media group on Instagram or whatever. Like we started a group chat, like old school. And it's like, these girls are my best friends. And I've like, haven't even met half of them in person.
I know. I talk about you guys by your first names, and Gabe's like, my husband Gabe is like, who are you talking about? I've never seen these people.
Real? Yeah. Our husbands don't believe us. They're like, you're making a friend. No, I promise. Like,
who are you talking to on your phone at 10 o'clock at night? Like, it's my girls. It's my tribe. So I don't want to keep everyone too long for this first episode, but we each wanted to briefly share a little bit about our families. So Steph, can you tell us about your family?
So my husband is Jordan. We actually met whenever I was in high school. I technically was a senior. He was a freshman in college, but we went to a really small high school. So we like knew each other beforehand, and we had mutual friends. And so they set us up. And then we dated for a while. We ended up going to Grand Canyon University for a little while. And then literally 2 weeks after we graduated, we got married. And then like a week after that, we moved to California. So Jordan owns his own company in Cali. And so that was just kind of where life took us. We started out in Orange County, and then we ended up moving to San Diego because we had some extended family out there that we wanted to be close to. And then in 2017, I got pregnant, found out about Joshua's diagnosis, which that whole story itself is kind of long. Basically, we found out that we were 50-50 chance through an NIPT test that he would have Down syndrome. I chose not to do an amniocentesis just because it wasn't going to change my decision at the time. So it didn't make a difference. And I just didn't want to go through any more like traumatic experiences. So we chose not to do that. And then in 2018, he came right on his due date, February 2nd. And we knew the second we saw him that he was sporting an extra chromosome. We just loved him that minute. And like, of course, there's been some tough, you know, challenges and things throughout. But I think in that moment of just seeing him and realizing he had Down syndrome, that my first initial thought was just, I wanted to protect him. I wanted to make sure he felt loved and that he was wanted. And he's just our little Joshy. And then so we moved to Arizona just recently. We just hit a year here, which is like blowing my mind. We moved back to Arizona to be closer to family and some close friends. And then in November, we had baby Jackson, his little brother. So that's kind of where we are.
Are you glad to be in Arizona, closer by family?
It's bittersweet. Like we really miss Cali. I know there's a lot more restrictions in California right now with all the COVID stuff going on. So I guess in some aspects, I'm grateful because we're able to kind of start back with some therapies and school and stuff like that. And I know for the amount of time that we had, him being away from therapies was really hard as is. So I'm grateful that we've kind of been able to jump back into some of those, you know.
I was going to say, is it hard switching over or switching everything over from Cali to Arizona?
It, oh my gosh, that's like a whole nother podcast episode, honestly. Like the Arizona, it's just been a process trying to get anything done with Arizona. Like I finally just now, literally last week, got some good news and I'm like, okay, I can breathe. I feel like we can move forward now and like get therapy set up and all this stuff, but it's just crazy. Like it's been a whole year. Granted, we moved like a month before COVID started, so not great timing. And I don't know if that experience would have been different had there not been a pandemic outbreak.
And a baby, you had baby Jackson. How has it been adjusting to a new baby?
Oh my gosh, it's been a lot. Going from one to two is freaking hard, you guys. It's so hard. I'm not.
Don't I know it?
It's hard. Yeah. You both know. It's hard. It's been an adjustment. But we're figuring it out, and I feel like Joshy's finally getting to this point. He's always been really sweet to brother. We've never had any issues with that, but just him adjusting in general. I think going from only child and getting all this attention, and even more so with his diagnosis, he probably got like double attention, to now having to share that with baby brother has been a big adjustment for everybody in the family. So we want to get to know you guys. I feel like I've been talking a lot. Sarah, why don't you go ahead and tell us how you came across Wolves in Tuscany?
So I think it was probably a little over a year ago, one of you, I think maybe Steffi, it was you, you were Taylor. Someone had contacted me and I don't know it to this day. I'm not sure.
I think it was me.
Did you find me through like a hashtag or how did you find?
No, I feel like, didn't I follow you before? I don't know.
I don't know, but I followed.
Maybe a mutual friend.
Well, when you reached out to me, to do a takeover. I remember I like sat in it for a while. I was like, I am way too nervous. And I was just kind of like not new to social media, but like not really like into Instagram or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was terrified to do a takeover. So, but you guys were super encouraging and like walked me through the takeover. And I think it was
funny because now you manage all of our takeovers. So anybody listening, don't be shy. Just reach out to Sarah.
Yeah, please do. But anyways, I did the takeover and just kind of like kept in touch with everyone and absolutely loved everything about Tulips in Tuscany. And then literally was just asked to join the team probably a year ago. I was so excited, so honored, like immediately booked a ticket to go do our meetup. And then I think it was like 2 days later.
Literally COVID hit like right after. Yeah.
Two days later.
One of these days we're going to do it. Okay. So you have a really unique story. Yes. Tell us a little bit about Lane's diagnosis and then a little bit about Hope.
So my son Lane is now a little over 4 and a half. He was diagnosed at the age of 2, and I will try and keep it short, but at the age of 2, he still wasn't speaking. So we had went to his pediatrician, and at that time he would not like purposefully play with toys or anything like that. So I always knew there was just something like a little different about him, but I don't know why, but I was like terrified of the word autism. I didn't know anyone, or so I thought. I didn't know anyone with autism and never thought I would have a son with autism. So we went to the pediatrician, and I had brought it up to her, and I was like, you know, do you think there's a possibility that my son's autistic? And she was a very, we'll say, laid back pediatrician, but she just looked at me and was like, oh, I absolutely think so. And I was like, oh, like, okay, oh, so what should I be doing, you know? And you kind of become like an FBI agent, just doing all the investigating and research and calling a million doctors. And we did end up getting him diagnosed at this place called Little Friend Center for Autism. And it was like a 4-part diagnosis, which I was really comfortable with, rather than just like one person seeing him on possibly like what could have been a bad day for him. This was like 4 days where they get to know him and then make the decision. So he was diagnosed with autism. And then shortly after, we took him to a neurologist for kind of just like a second opinion. And the neurologist had actually sent us home with a swab kit. And I was like, oh, we don't need a swab kit. Like, we don't have chromosomal disorders in our family. Like, never knew anyone to have a genetic disorder. And sure enough, it came back that he had Fragile X syndrome. And that was just like the start of getting our whole family tested, learning about Fragile X syndrome. And since then, he's also been diagnosed with epilepsy and ADHD as well.
Wow. So, can you tell us a little bit too about Hope?
Yeah. So Hope is our 9-month-old baby. And I feel like when I tell people that she's special needs, people are shocked. And one of the things I'll say is it is Fragile X. There's not many physical characteristics. So even when I, you know, tell people Lane's, you know, special needs, people just kind of have a hard time understanding. But so many people have asked me how we know so soon with Hope. But when we took Lane to his annual Fragile X appointment at the Fragile X clinic downtown Chicago, they swabbed Hope and she was only 3 months old, but they just do like a cheek swab. And they were able to tell us a couple weeks later that she also had Fragile X.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah. I'm curious too. So with Lane, he had these different diagnoses. Does that mean that it's going to look like Hope is also going to have an autism diagnosis, or like, what does that look like for her?
So the autism, it's about 20%, I believe, of Fragile X kiddos will also have autism. We have, we just have no idea with Hope. And girls with Fragile X, they tend to sometimes, well, I guess I don't want to say they do better, but because there's two X's, she has a better chance of not being so delayed. So I don't know. They're so, it's just so iffy. It's so up in the air. So I just really just go day by day. Like, she was clapping the other day, and that's something that Lane didn't do till he was honestly like 3 years old. So
yeah.
And she's doing it at 9 months old. And I don't know if it's because she's watching her older siblings and like picking up on things quicker, but I don't know. Right. Everything is so up in the air. Like, if she'll have autism, if she won't, or, you know,
it's going to be a different journey for her.
That's so unique.
Okay. So Paige, I want to hear about you. You're the newest co-host to join our team, and she is going to tell us about how she came into this community.
Hello to everyone listening out there. I am in Florida, and I have a wonderful husband, and we decided to have a baby back in 2016, and we got pregnant with Tristan right away. It was like a dream. We didn't have any fertility issues, which, you know, it was just so magical the way it happened.
That's kind of wild. We got pregnant with Joshua really fast too.
It was crazy. I mean, I literally know the exact day. Like, that might be TMI, but I know the exact day. And so, which actually plays into like his entire birth story. So we went in and we got tested, and they said, okay, yep, you're pregnant. You sure are. And we were so excited. You know, this was our first baby. We waited so long. I wanted to have his babies probably like the day we got married. And we waited like 3 years after to get to that point. So it was just really special and exciting for me. And I was really naive at that time because no one in my family had ever been vocal about miscarriages or tough pregnancies or anything like that. So I was thinking it was just all rainbows and roses, and I'm just gonna, you know, it's just gonna go so easy. So it did not. I was really healthy, and he just wasn't growing very fast in the beginning. And my doctor was, you know, just kept asking, are you sure, you know, what day he was conceived? Are you sure? I'm like, I'm really sure. So from day one, or from 6 weeks, I should say, it was just constantly like just these weird questions. And what later came to find out, they were red flags. His growth was a little slow in the beginning, and then I had cramping, and then I had some spotting, and it was just a constant roller coaster. But it was a mostly healthy pregnancy because I was doing great. I just had a little nausea at night. And then the real kicker came for us was the week of my baby shower. I was getting measured and my amniotic fluid was just off the charts. I looked like I was 37 weeks pregnant, and I was only 30 weeks pregnant, actually. And so my OB was really sweet because I'd known her for years, and she tried not to freak us out. So she said, oh, don't worry about it. It's probably just, you know, a little extra fluid that can change quickly in the next week. So just come back after your shower and we'll assess it then. So we had a great shower. It was like one of the last, like, very peaceful, calm, you know, ignorance is bliss kind of memories. And then that following Monday, we went in and our world just came shattering down because she realized that it was not going down. In fact, it got even worse than it was before. And so she immediately referred us to a maternal fetal medicine specialist. And that Friday, we got in with the maternal fetal medicine specialist. Everything was just a blur from that point on. And we ended up getting a diagnosis of 33% skeletal dysplasia, or 33% possible Down syndrome, or 33% something that's not diagnosable in utero. So we were just hoping for best case scenario at that point was actually Down syndrome. And then it was just, yeah, it was a very, very crazy whirlwind of a time when we started off so naively thinking that, you know, these things don't happen. Like, it happens to everybody else. It's not going to happen to us.
I mean,
like,
I don't know anybody who, I mean, maybe if you're, I guess on next week's episode, we're going to be talking with Mercedes, who adopts a child specifically who has a disability. But I don't know. I think anytime you get that prenatally, that's never a thought in your head, especially as first-time parents. You're not thinking like, oh man, I wonder if this test is going to come back positive for something. Like, I was totally shocked when I got my news back. I was like, what? I'm 25. How is that even possible?
Right. Yep.
Yeah. And my doctor explained a lot of it away. She's like, well, you're petite. So, you know, your husband's not like 12 foot tall. So maybe he's just growing really slow. And everything was just explained away little by little by little until it was just too many coincidences to not amount to anything.
Yeah.
That's wild. Okay, so just really quickly before we kind of start to wrap up and get to the Q&A section, you briefly shared, and I don't know if you're ready to talk about it too much, but you briefly shared that you guys just got an autism diagnosis as well. So you have a dual diagnosis now for Tristan, if you wouldn't mind just sharing a little bit about that and how you guys came to come to that conclusion.
Yeah, so I've been in a really weird spot with it, honestly, because we've always known Tristan has been different. He's been less huggy and touchy-feely. I guess that's the like most layman's terms I can put it. That's, you know, he's just not been that kid. He likes to snuggle, but it's always on his terms. And we just always attribute it to, oh, he's just being so sassy right now. You know, he's got such a big personality and he's just not feeling it. And that was that. But as he just grew up, we just noticed that there's a lot of things about him that were just different. And it worked out in his favor for the most part until he was able to be more independent. And then we started seeing different behaviors and things got a little bit challenging. And when I say a little bit, I mean a lot bit challenging, because now he's able to, you know, walk away from you and throw a huge temper tantrum, and he's 40 pounds. He's huge. Yeah. So things have escalated to the point where we can't just keep attributing it to, oh, he's just being sassy. And, you know, he's in fully,
not the
fully
terrible twos anymore. Classroom.
Yeah. It's not the terrible twos or the terrible threes.
Okay, everyone, so we're going to head into the Q&A segment of our episode, where we'll be answering a few questions from all of you that posted some on our Insta story stickers.
We're going to jump into our last segment of the podcast, which is the Q&A segment, where you guys sent in some of your questions that you have for us. So we picked just a few. So Sarah, it looks like the first question is for you. And it says, how did you find out that your two kids had Fragile X syndrome? What were some of the signs / red flags to seek that diagnosis out for them?
That is a great question, because I actually had no idea what Fragile X was or what any like symptoms would be. So our neurologist is actually the one who, when we finally did go back, when he called us back to say that the genetic testing came back, I asked him, I was like, how did you know to send me home with a swab kit. We've seen so many doctors, like no one ever thought to do genetic testing. And it's very interesting because he looked at me and he's just like a man of few words. He's like just an older, wise doctor. And he just looked at me and he's like, I took one look at that little boy's ears and knew he had a genetic disorder. And so with Fragile X syndrome, they do have large ears. And he's had, I mean, since the
Lade's ears moment, are so cute. I freaking love
They're like
his
my
ears.
Favorite thing the about cutest. Him. They're and so I mean, cute. I have large ears. I always got made fun of and called Dumbo as a kid. Josh has big ears. So we were like, whatever, you know, his ears are big. Yeah. Never would have known that that was like a red flag. But yeah, like I said, it's really similar. Well, he does have autism, but it's just a lot of the same characteristics. So like with him being nonverbal, with him having delays, those were all red flags for me.
Wow. That's really interesting.
Yeah. And with Hope, we didn't notice anything. We just had her swabbed because it's genetic and we knew that there was a chance. So
that makes sense.
Next one is for Steffi. It says, why did your family move from Cali to Arizona?
Well, my husband and I actually sat down when we were deciding whether we wanted to move or not, because obviously his work was in California. He owns a business out there. So it just made sense to be in California. But after Joshua's diagnosis, we just felt so disconnected from our family. Both of our immediate families were in Arizona. And then my sister found out she was pregnant. Her and her husband were having a baby. My husband's sister, so my sister-in-law, who's also one of my best friends, had a baby. So just babies, really, like cousins. We had this vision in our head of like wanting all the cousins to grow up together and be close. We had heard really good things about the therapies, just long-term care and all these different opportunities in Arizona as well for Joshua. So that was kind of a big reason, which kind of has turned out to be a bit of a dud. So we're hoping that turns a new leaf here soon. But that was kind of our biggest reasons. And then, of course, freaking California is so expensive.
Yeah.
We had moved like 5 times since we'd lived there, just kind of upgrading each time.
Yeah.
But it was just, you just always kind of feel like you're drowning out there. Like, we just felt like we never could really like catch a break or like take a deep breath.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a big reason too.
Yeah. Well, and it's so important to be around family and to have that support and help.
It's been so nice. Like he loves his grandparents on both sides. Like Joshy's so close with them. And so that's been a big blessing and I know they love getting to see him too. So, and we get date nights more often because we have trusted babysitter, which is nice.
Yeah. We feel the same about cousins with our family. My sister-in-law has 4 kids that are super close in age. And so they just moved back to Orlando. And although they live a little farther in South Orlando, we couldn't imagine, you know, not being close to our family.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. This last one is for you, Paige. It says, how are you doing with Tristan's autism diagnosis? And what were some signs or red flags for you to have him evaluated?
At first I walked in. So it was just, you know, the pandemic just really rocked my boat. It rocked my boat. It rocked everybody else's boat in the entire world. So I said, you know, we're having a tough year, but he has a new baby. We have a new baby, Ezra. All of his things got yanked. No TV, you know, like his normal schedule with his shows. No people, his therapies, everything just completely got turned upside down. And so I figured that was what was happening in 2020. And as the months went by, we added back therapy, we added back school, we added back, you know, his regular routine, and things weren't getting better. In fact, they were just getting worse. So I thought, you know, he's 4, like I said earlier, he's 4 now. So there's something else going on. And I walked into the evaluation and I thought, well, you know, she's probably just going to tell me I'm being dramatic because I am a little extra, which is why I fit in with the lucky few community here. The Down syndrome community, I fit in because I'm a little extra. And so I thought she was just going to tell me I'm being dramatic. It's just a sensory issue. He'll outgrow it. And as we're sitting there, she just starts asking me questions about different things that she's noticing and other questions about things that may or may not have happened. And I just got, you know, really sad because I realized I'm not being dramatic and I've probably been in denial this whole time. And we're probably going to add another diagnosis to my kid. And it's just a tough thing to, you know, it's like you're going through the Welcome to Holland all over again. I'm grieving another diagnosis that I didn't think we were going to have. So it's just been a little bit of a grieving process, but I think I'm at a better place right now with it. And I'm just happy now that we can get the resources we need specific to behaviors and get the therapies we need to get help.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad that you guys are going to be able to hopefully get some more resources for him too, with having that, you know, added diagnosis on there.
Yes, so thankful. And that's a wrap for our first episode. Thanks so much for sticking it out with us. If you guys are interested in supporting Tulips, there's a few ways to get involved. First, you can support us by heading to our shop and rocking our merchandise. We love seeing you guys in your Tulips merch.
Second, it's seriously so comfy, you guys. The merch is so comfortable.
It's so comfy. My husband actually stole my shirt. So if you're loving Tulips.
When the husband stole it.
Second, if you're loving Tulips, you can become an official Tulips patron by becoming a monthly subscriber and earning awesome patron-only perks. And last, you can help us spread the word about Tulips. If you think you or someone you love would be a great fit for a Tulips takeover or guest host on the podcast, be sure to fill out the contact form on our website.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.